public statement from a member of the public that was emailed to the council.
Hi, the person you have called is not available.
Would you like me to read?
Please leave a short 10-second message after the tone and we'll send the message as a text.
Would you please acknowledge in the minutes that we did try to contact Mr. Jacobs and there was a non-response, please, so that it's recorded with you as a secretary. Okay, questions from public airport committee meeting there are nil. Questions from elected members there are nil. Now, public question time. We have a public question that ordered into the committee, do we, Councillor Willingham?
It was probably more of a statement, I think.
Okay, so public are there now, public question time. Is any members from the public wish to have any questions? Certainly, would you please, who you are, and not that we don't know you.
Just on the airport parking tonight on 10.2, will staff members be covered in that parking fee?
I think that would be a decision of this committee when they discuss the resolution. This stage it hasn't been clarified. It will be discussed. Thank you. Any other questions from the public? No further questions from the public. We move on to public statement time. Any questions from the statement? Certainly.
Just on today's agenda, 10.2 staff parking. Charging a fee to employees at the airport for parking. Stated in the summary as a proposed solution to staff parking at the Port Hedland Airport. How is that a solution? The solution would have to present itself in the planning stages of each of the building developments at the airport. Obviously, it was not a concern of the planning department at the time. Today is another attack on the average hard-working, low-paid people of Hedland. If it isn't hard enough to keep employees now in this economic climate, would the same officer be happy to work at the town of Port Hedland and pay a fee for the privilege of parking at the Civic Centre car park? Again, all planning proposals that have had anything to do with I've had a lot to do with planning proposals in the past, and car parking compliance is a high priority of the town of Port Hedland. The main thing to remember here is who will be affected, and that will be the low-paid working class struggling to survive in Hedland. Members of this community are leaving our town because of these very charges that keep coming up. Because of some officers that obviously are detached from the economic hardship of upon us on Hedland. This policy of making money at all costs is destroying the social fabric of the community. There is no discussion needed on this charge. Just knock it on the head.
Thank you, Mr. Bianco. We'll take that into consideration when we discuss the item that comes up for the committee. Thank you very much. Right, now we move on. Questions from members without notice. Now, which Councillor Gillingham.
Oh, okay. Would you like me to speak now?
Yes, please. Oh, yes.
Before I do speak, I'd just like to mention regarding the policy 4/006 election caretaker period that I am standing as for a re-election to the Tamworthy Council in the upcoming elections. Thank you. This was sent to me from Michael Jennings, the Principal School of the Air, on Tuesday, October the 1st, and it's also a CC to Councillor Carter, Councillor Zombat, Councillor Jacob, and Councillor Hunt that I can see on the email here. And it says, hi Jan, I will not be able to make the meeting, but please oppose that strongly on my heart regarding proposed paid parking. And he's gone on to say, the Town for Heaven should be cleaning up the airport grounds before they greedily look for more ways to raise revenue on the back of a half-developed facility. The, in brackets, top car park, for example, has minimal lighting, if any, no safe walkways to businesses, terminal, etc. It is essentially a glorified sand pit. there's a place to park, not a car park as such. It begs the question, what are people actually being asked to pay for? The town of Port Hedland have developed significant parking issues all around the airport grounds because the poorly conceived, then implemented short-term car park. No matter how it is viewed, that area is now an inexcusable waste of valuable space. It sits empty nearly all day, every day, and the infrastructure implemented for that could not possibly be any way near the expected revenue. Having worked at Port Hedland International Airport site on and off since 2007, I have seen too much of this make-it-up-as-you-go-along business. Future directions, including issues such as this, need to be better planned, considered and implemented. A good starting point would be to bring things in order that are currently out of order and unsafe. I have raised such issues many times with the airport users groups to little or no effect, even when those public paid servants agree that the items raised are an issue. Plans seem to be put together and then we move at a glacial pace. This is very frustrating. The Department of Education and the Royal Flying Doctor Service have invested millions of dollars at the airport site, $2.1 million in 1998 and a further $4 million in 2011. We contribute ongoing annual costs to the town of Port Hedland. Both organisations provide essential services to the remote people, including many children of the Pilbara. The town of Port Hedland should be looking at a way to assist, not hinder, our organisations, clients and personnel. Next year, 2014, Port Hedland School of the Air celebrates 50 years of delivering its service to the good folk of the Pilbara. And the last paragraph is, if the other councillors, mayor candidates, want our support at the upcoming election, they should be sympathetic to our situation. Regards, Michael Jennings, principal from Port Hedland School of the Air. Just wanted to read that out.
Thank you very much, Councillor Ham. Would you like to make a comment, Mr. Director?
Through the chair, we've met recently with Michael Jennings School of the Air, and I think maybe if we suspend standing orders on agenda item 10.2, because I think both members of the public and committee might be a little bit misunderstanding the intent of this item. The item was a request from Northwest Aviation. There is currently free parking at the airport. They've requested they want to be in a different location. They want to go into the paid parking, and what we've offered them is a very discounted rate to be in there. So they've requested it of us. We haven't requested it of them. We're not saying to them, park in there and pay money. They're saying, we want to park in there, and what rate could we have it at? So that's how this item's come about. I suppose going back to the whole issue of paid parking being introduced in the first place, and if people can remember back to prior to paid parking, you could not park in the short-term car park. The long-term car park was a thieves' paradise for people breaking into vehicles. We haven't had any of those issues. The reality is that the Port Hedland International Airport, like everywhere else, has paid parking. I think it's, at this stage, it's fairly generous. There is half an hour free, and after that, $2 an hour, which you go to any other airport, and it's certainly higher than that. It's always the option of the committee and the council to remove all that paid parking, but if you went down that path, then you'll go back to what you had. So I can understand what people are saying, that it's empty, but it's empty for a reason, because it is short-term paid parking. It's exactly that. The businesses that operate out the airport are businesses, whether they're School of the Air or Royal Flying Doctor or whichever they are. They have a leased area and they should park inside their leased area. If they can't be inside their leased area, then they can acquire more area, and we've been in discussions with them about that. But the reality is there is a free area to park at the moment. It does have lighting into that parking area. If you want to give more parking away free, then we'd have to do something about either building it. But when you think about how they operate out there, they should operate inside their businesses. So I can appreciate what people are saying, but I suppose we're at that point in time. It is a business. It does return to the town a percentage of the money that it makes each year, and the more money that the airport makes, the more money the town makes, and the better off I think the ratepayers are. So you need to keep that in mind when you think about the airport, because going back to free paid parking will be a detriment to the operations of the airport.
Thank you, Director. Yes, we will certainly suspend standing orders for that discussion. Okay, we move on to declaration for members have given due consideration all matters contained in the business papers presented before the meeting to have an indication. Everybody's aware of the contents. 1, 2, 3, 4, carried unanimously. 6. Confirmation of minutes of previous meeting held on the 4th of September. I have two matters of confirmation that I'd like clarified from the minutes, and that's one's on page 22. It's regarding project timelines. According to the project timeline on the verge of Menity, we should have that completed at the end of September. Can anybody tell me, is there any extended date for that to be completed, or will that be completed on time?
Through the chair, I can pass to the airport development officer.
Yes, and the verge amenity has been delayed. I think you mentioned last meeting that the shelters are now subject to development approval and building certification, and that has held us up. So we're likely now that it will be towards the end of October, November for those works.
Thank you. And the second one is the project timeline for the business holiday facility. That was to be completed at the end of September also.
Yep. So through the chair, the director alluded to that before regarding the apron works.
Yep.
So the same contractor for the apron works will be used for the bus holding facility, so that will now be happening in the beginning of November.
Completed
in November. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Any other points of clarification? That points of clarification. Could I ask them to move the
resolution? So moved.
Move Councillor Zombak. Chris Crawley. All those in favour? Carried. Announcement by a presiding member about the discussion. I have nothing. And we come to the most important presentation now. We have Mr. Steve Turner to make a presentation to us on the architectural design, which we kindly met in Darwin and very, very impressed with his presentation. So, Steve, this is our committee. Apologies, we have a few missing, but we appreciate
you. Thank you very much for the opportunity of talking before the committee. I'll try and be brief, which is always difficult for me, for the opportunity. My firm is SDA Astute Architecture. We are regional architects. We started as a small regional practice in Mackay, which is about the same spot as you are, but on the east coast of Australia. And we're very keen to get involved in your airport development project. And I think our firm is ideally suited to it. A couple of things. We are a regional architectural practice. That means that we've spent all our life working on two-thirds of CBD budgets. We understand what it means to build buildings on a tight budget because we've always worked in, for 30 years we've worked in the regional area. Being based in Mackay Airport we did 22 years ago. We got the gig because we were regional architects. That was the first airport we'd done. It won us state architectural awards and tourism awards, and off the back of that, I suppose we've grown a practice now that specialises in regional airports. We've now done work on 16 regional airports throughout Australia, in excess of 50 projects now. I'd suggest we are the most experienced regional architect airport architects in the country now. We're currently engaged on 4 in the west, which includes Busselton, Karratha. We've just, Onslow is coming out of the ground or under construction at the moment, and we're doing some work on Christmas Island as well at the moment. The big difference is that we are a small practice. We've recently changed our practice a little bit. I'm the principal of the practice and I design and manage all the projects that our office does. We only have a very small staff now, but we've formed a relationship with a major national architectural firm and we manage the documentation process, but they provide the resources. And that allows us to really focus on the design and the important part of the project. I'll quickly go through if I figure out how to push this. The most important thing for any project is for us to listen to what you've got to say. Every project is unique. Great buildings are only ever realised in a partnership between the architects, the stakeholders and the owners of the building. We don't claim to be experts, well, we probably are experts, but we don't come in and tell you what to do. You know far more about your airport than we do. What we do, because we've now worked on 16 airports, we might challenge some of the things, we might ask you lots of questions, but at the end of the day, we listen, and it's really important that we do listen. And it's a team sport. Architecture is not an individual event. It's a team sport. And we very much work in that way. I manage each project. And the other thing is that we also like very much to have the ear of stakeholders. There's nothing like sitting in front of all the people who are going to be involved as the architect to get an understanding of what the project is all about. And that's part of the things that we recommend. This was with Sunday Airport. They didn't listen when they first started, and they had demonstrations in the street of the town about what was happening at the airport. That's why it's important to listen. But the other thing about listening and involving stakeholders and everybody in it is there's a much greater sense of ownership at the end of the project. Basically, people actually want to be heard. If you let people be heard, even if you don't do what they say, and you can explain why, if they've been heard, they'll own the project at the end of the day. One of the things that we've learned now, having designed airports for 22 years, is that you need to begin with the end in mind. The number of projects we come to, a number now we've seen, we've had to walk away from terminal buildings because they haven't thought about the end in mind. What I'm quickly going to run through here, this is a little design. We were engaged to, it was finished about a year ago, an upgrade of Whitsunday Airport. We originally, they put it out to tender for detailed design. The design had been done by another set of consultants. We put in a tender for the detailed design documentation administration of the contract, but we also suggested there were some fundamental flaws in their airport terminal and offered them an additional fee to redesign it. And I'll quickly run through some of the little issues that we identified in this project. Firstly, here's check-in counters. You can actually enter the building there. And if you ask the client where they'll put the next check-in counter, the answer is you have to demolish all the airline offices, you have to realign all your check-in counters. I don't know whether, I recently did a trip right up the coast here and I went and saw Kununurra, which is a really lovely looking airport, but I'd ask you the question, I don't know who designed Kununurra, but where do they put their next check-in counters? Because they've got their check-in counters across the end of the building. The other thing when we designed this building is that we saved the airport owners $250,000 a year in labour costs. And the reason we did that is that we changed the security. Basically, at the moment, their security goes through here. People exit the lounge through here. That means you've got to have one security staff person there. And as Anna can tell you, a security staff person will cost you $300,000 a year if you're airport design. So that's a design decision that was made by the architects that actually cost the airport owners $250,000 a year if that building had been built.
Oh, Steve, just so you know, there's a laser pointer on there too.
Sorry?
There's a laser pointer.
Ah, right. Oh, yeah, that's in the middle.
Circle in the middle.
Sorry, I'm a moron when it comes to this. This was also the design that was originally done. You can see this was actually the existing building line of the building. They were going to pull the roof off entirely, replace the structure and put a new building on here. And then my question then is, where do you expand the departure lounge? Because they're actually building to here. So what we suggested is... I'll actually quickly run through our floor plan. This is the floor plan we provided. First of all, the building was back the front because they had check-in at the other end and baggage claim here, which means that every person, if you had a check-in at this end of the building, every person that's leaving in a vehicle here will disrupt the flow of traffic. So you should have the check-in here because you drop off that check-in there. So that's a simple factor here. We changed it around so that the check-in areas were here. You can see now we can actually double the size of this terminal without any disruption to the operation of that terminal whatsoever. We can actually theoretically go on ad infinitum in this way. If we want to put another baggage claim device on it, these are portable, we just put it here. And again, you can actually do that without disrupting the operation of the terminal at all. One of the little things we did here, you can see we put the security co-located with the exit, so the security staff here monitor the exit with the backflow alarm, save $300,000 a year in operational costs. By putting your security here also, we provided a natural queue space, because one of the big issues in every regional airport I've gone to is the queue crush, getting into security. By doing a clever design here, people actually queue in that space there. The other thing we did is that when we extended the departure lounge, we left these two areas open in here. They're actually external courtyards where you can get outside and see the aeroplanes. The reason we did that, when you'll see when we go to the next, building is this was the extension. We kept the original roof. We then put a little extension on like this. Courtyards are open at the end, so the rainwater really rains with Sunday. The rain can drop into the courtyards at the outside. When we want to extend this building, we just do the same thing again. We can double the size of the departure lounge without any modifications to the existing building that we've done. Again, saves the airport owner an enormous amount of money. This is a really interesting statistic. For every dollar that you spend on building a building, in the 30 years of its operation, you will spend $5 on maintaining it, and you'll spend $200 on operating it. So the real whole of life cost of every dollar of construction is $206. Now, architect's fee, a little aside of this, the architect's fees or the principal consultant's fees are usually in the order of about 10% of that construction cost. So that's 0.07 of the whole of life cost of the building. Put that in its context. If you were to catch a plane from Rockhampton to Port Hedland, which is about 3,500 miles, the architect's or the principal consultant's fee is equivalent to the trip down the runway at Rockhampton Airport. But the principal consultant is the person who can most affect the $200 in operational costs. I'd suggest that the selection of your principal design consultant is the most important commercial decision that you'll actually make in your development, especially if you're talking the sort of numbers that you're talking. To select that consultant on the basis of price is a really big mistake. That original design of the last terminal building, if they'd run with that design, they'd be, for the rest of the life of that terminal and its configuration, paying $300,000 a year. A couple of other things that we did on that terminal building. That was there. You can imagine the cost of extending this, then you've got to pull it all out, the disruption to the terminal in doing all those sorts of things. So by thinking where the terminal's going to go next to expand to its growth, that's a really important thing to do before you start on any of the design. What we did at Karratha, which is currently nearly finished its documentation, is that we looked at what was the maximum capacity of aircraft that was containable on the available apron space, and we used that as the figure that determined the maximum size of the terminal building. You only get one chance at a first impression. One of the great tenets that we have of all the buildings that we do is that this is the gateway to the city. This is the gateway to the Pilbara for a lot of people, 500,000 a year coming here at the moment. One of the things that we have always done, and that was actually the thing that was very different at Mackay Airport, that's the view you saw when you arrived at Mackay Airport. That's walking through the arrival stall. Because we thought, you know, coming through a little tunnel and winding up at the baggage claim is not the nicest way to enter the terminal. So we worked really hard on all our terminal buildings to create a sense of place and a sense of arrival, but also to make it unique. And all the terminals we have done are unique. That's the central concourse in Mackay. This is Onslow. This is the view that you would see of Onslow. This is actually under construction at the moment. That's the view when you get out of an aeroplane. Quite a striking, different sort of building. That's the roof. It's up at the moment. It's going to be an interesting building. But again, when you see it in its context, we're using zinc alum on the outside. It's very much a building in Onslow. This is one we did at Longreach Airport. And you probably see Longreach, you want to keep the sun off the walls. There's a 6-metre cantilever at the front. It's like the great big hat on the thing. It's done in zinc alum, the red earth. These here are sunshades that hang over and protect the baggage areas, sort of like the corks hanging off your hat. But again, it's a very unique building for Longreach. What I've quickly done now, because I haven't got much time, is I've got a little folder with some. There's one there for before and after shots, which is I've just quickly. Can you just put. Yeah, play through those. This is Rockhampton Airport before we do. Just quite click through them. See, it's quite dark. There were bugs and horrible sorts of stuff up on the top. These were screens that were full of bugs. There were air conditioning ducts above it. It was dark. It was like a cave. You couldn't see an aeroplane. It was like the Great Wall of China. You didn't know an aeroplane. Terminal buildings, one of the things we always say is if you've got to look for a sign in a terminal building, we haven't done our job properly. One of the things that you want an intuitive flow. The ideal thing is to be able to step out of your car and see the aeroplane and not have any choices. Just quickly scroll through those photos. You can see these are all full of bugs. It's actually very dark and dim. The check-in areas and then this was the finished product. We got rid of all the air conditioning ducts, we got rid of all the others, we put lots of uplights on the roof, and what that immediately did is raise the sense of space and volume in the building. It feels open and light. It just transformed the entire building. Without really, all we did in that building was reconfigure it and redo the finishes and stuff, and it was an old Ansett, had check-in at one, TAA at one end and Ansett at the other, so we turned it into a user terminal. This is Mackay Airport. When it was built about 22 years ago, very tight budget. You can see it had vinyl floors and those sorts of things. We were fortunate enough to do a major refurbishment of that, and you'll see the transformation. That's the original building, back when Art Busters were around from Expo 88. That's still the old one, but it still had a nice sense of arrival. You'll see the latest. This is the major upgrade of Mackay Airport. All the nice ceramic tiles and through the terminal. So again, made a profound difference to the presentation. I learned a big lesson there. You don't do space frames in a dark colour. It was amazing when we painted those space frames white, how that really transformed that building, gave it a much greater. This is Whitsunday Airport before we got there. Probably looks a bit familiar, some of these sorts of. Quite a nice little building, but just really tired, and you know, the old metal ceilings, and sort of looks a bit familiar probably. It's like your terminal's a little bit tired at the moment. And these are the upgraded terminal. You can see we didn't change the, I mean, it was a major extension on the building, but just click through those. You can see a lot of, again, using things like uplighting on the ceilings. The concessions, it's just a nice open light. And you can see these, that's ceiling fans. I'll quickly mention those. Those low-speed, high-volume fans, you can raise the temperature from 24 to 27, which, you've got 1 metre per second air movement, is not enough to blow papers off a table. But they're huge. You can get them up to 6 metres wide. We're actually putting them in Karratha as well. So you can run the temperature, the air conditioning, at 27 degrees instead of 24. Still feels exactly the same to a person, you know, when you step out of the shower and breathe. That's cool, evaporative cooling. For every 1 degree you raise the set point, you save 10% of your energy consumption running under peak load. So the installation of those fans in that airport terminal saves them 30% of their energy costs during the peak load. We're doing a similar thing at Karratha Airport. And there's lots of other things like CO2 monitoring and those sorts of things. And it's really important because energy costs are going up. That, again, we can value add to a building because we've been doing this for years before it became fashionable. But those sorts of energy savings are available. And if you've got a major public building like this being built without ceiling fans and running air conditioning, you're throwing money away. That's, you can see the big fans in the baggage claim area. Very different building, just open and light and very simple. Oh, we're back to the end. So I could go on for ages, but essentially that's what we do. I think the reason, because we are regional architects, we're brought up in the country in smaller areas. We work at Mackay, which is very similar. It's just a few years ahead of Port Hedland. It's a FIFO port. We have 1.2 million passengers a year coming through that terminal now. We've critically, I suppose, we've grown that terminal from 300,000 up to 1.2 million. So we've had quite extensive experience in airports of similar size as yours. You're at 500,000, you're going through that threshold. And there's a big change of airports once you get over 500,000, once you get up to 800,000 passengers. The whole business case changes in the airport. It is then about selling in retail and car parks, and they're the sorts of things you need to accommodate. And the advantage we have, I suppose, is that we've started with airport terminals at 30,000 and we've gone up to 2 million and we've done three ports which are very similar to yours, Mackay, Rockhampton and Sunshine Coast, all with about 300,000 passengers. They're all running at 800 to 1.2 million now. So we've been through the process and learnt all the lessons at another airport's expense. The last thing I'd say, if you ask any architect which building is their best building, the proper answer or the correct answer is their next one. So if you commission us to do Port Hedland, it'll be better than Karratha.
It's a plus, Steve. It's a plus. Thanks very much indeed, Steve.
I just got a little brochure that everybody can have that actually talks about that. That figures, they're actually referenced in here about the cost of building. So you're welcome to take one of those. And
thank you.
By opening up the airport, you just showed
us that
you didn't necessarily add anything to the roof. Was all you
know, no, Rockhampton, we actually got rid of it and we actually uplift the ceilings. And that's the same. One of the things you make, this Karratha, make a profound difference. When you're familiar with Karratha, it's got a horrible baby blue yellow, whatever the space frame. paint that white and put lots of uplighting on the ceiling, it will make a profound difference to the sense of space because that space disappears. But I mean, having walked through your terminal a couple of times, I mean, what your terminal is really difficult are the low ceiling heights in those areas, but there are areas like baggage claim check-in and those that's not a problem. The way the structure is, my first reaction is that you take a piece out of the centre, take the existing roof off, provide clear story lighting and high-level roofs. Because the high-level roofs do more than, well, at Karratha we're actually putting in over the departure lounge, where the concessions are, we've got two stories in that area, but then we're actually using over the baggage claim where you don't need the big ceiling heights, we're actually building two stories there so we can put airline lounges there. At that, you know, within that same space. But there's very good reasons other than aesthetic reasons to have that space. You know, if you get 1,000 people working in the building, each person actually gives out 1.5 kilowatts of heat. Heat rises, as you know, so if you've got a space with a lot of volume, the heat actually rises up to the top of the roof. So you've got a very simple way of quickly dissipating heat because you can't pull air in fast enough to cool down. If you've got 1,000 people coming to the building, which you can in an airport, in 15 minutes you can have 1,000 people in it, 15 minutes later none. You've got to bring in 10 litres per second of fresh air. Now if it's 50 degrees outside, and hopefully 27 because you'll have your ceiling fans going inside, that's still an enormous amount of energy that you're using. And there's lots of other really interesting things like CO2 monitoring in the return airs. They now, with the technology, you actually measure the level of CO2. So if there's no people in the building breathing heavy and generating CO2, the outdoor air damp is actually shut down, so you're not bringing in that air. Once people come, the CO2 levels start to rise, the dampers open up. So there's all sorts of really innovative things that actually don't cost a huge amount of money but have an enormous dividend in the energy costs. And that, you know, if you... The other thing that's true is it is never cheaper to install or do any of that at the beginning when you're designing it, before you've actually done anything. As a project progresses, the cost of making modifications to save energy or to make it work properly go up exponentially. So that's why, at the end of the day, I mean, I always do the thing, you know, in terms of if you got an architect who was experienced and competent, you paid him twice as much as the architectural fees, in that proportion I talked about before, that's the difference of travelling across the apron on the runway, on the journey between Rockhampton and Port Hedland. And yet, that's the person who can make the biggest difference in terms of the ongoing costs of the building. So that's the best investment. That's your most important investment, is picking the right design consultants.
Good. Thank you very much indeed, Steve. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Excellent. So move on now. Brett now takes over for his presentation.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Brett.
I thought today a few things had happened. We had the AAA conference and the release of the draft state aviation strategy. So I thought I'd do a very brief summary on the AAA, but I'll talk a little bit more detail on the state aviation strategy and what that paper contains and what the key recommendations are in that paper, and then move on to the airport interim investment program, the strategic reviews, the operational updates, and the stakeholder engagement program, which we're about to embark on towards the end of this month. So, state aviation strategy. WA has a vision to be a world-class aviation network which supports and promotes the state's economy and social development. So that's the key vision that the state has for its aviation industry and business. And everything from that, that drives the strategy, basically. So everything that comes from that vision drives the strategy. A few points to note is the state's experiencing rapid growth. Perth Airport's been growing at 8.3%. That's over the last 5 years. It's actually been growing at 9% per annum for the last 10 years. So that's quite substantial growth. The Chamber of Minerals and Energies has estimated, based on committed and probable projects, there will be an extra 390,000 passengers by 2014. And based on probable projects, which are not probable, sorry, possible projects, it could be an extra 640 additional passengers by 2017. So we're going for an extra 6 to 10 extra flights out of Perth Airport at morning peak period. So that's a substantial increase, and when you consider that runway is already at capacity, it's a substantial problem to the entire state, given the constraints within Perth Airport. Currently, most of the passenger projections that are done by BITRA and by airports and agencies actually excludes charter flights. Charter flights are nearly a fifth of all passenger movements that we have across the state. It's 14%. That's just under a fifth. So it's a big gap that actually needs to be looked at as well. And the state aviation strategy identifies this. There's a little opportunity at Perth Airport for peak load spread across those times because of mining charters and rosters and the like. So they have certain times they need to be in and out, and it's all at the same time. And there's very little opportunity at the moment to try and load share across different time frames. And growth estimates are most airports, when they do their master planning and their passenger forecasting, traditionally underestimate their growth within WA. It's a unique problem to Western Australia. In other states, they get it pretty much spot on. And it's primarily around the fly-in, fly-out market and the unprecedented growth in the resource sector. That's what's driving all of this. So Perth Airport, I think, was estimating 4% growth over the next 20 years. That was 10 years ago. It's been growing at 9%. So it's grossly underestimated. What that means is that there is a infrastructure gap between what is currently on the ground and what needs to happen and what is being planned. And so the state is concerned about this, about the underestimation of growth going forward. And there's also a lack of central government planning and oversight, oversight and coordination presents risk to the state and the national economies. Opportunity to review governance models. The state, in the aviation strategy as well, one of the key themes that come out of that strategy is the desire to see regional airports review their governance models. Local government, they recognise within the strategy that there are limitations in the local government-owned models at the moment. Principally, it's around access to funds and funding, because airports suck up a lot of capital, a lot of funds, and they need access to financing. It's the only way they can really fund their future programs, so they need access to substantial financing. And the issue you have as a local council agency is basically that your funding, your financing is limited to your rates base. And so that makes it very difficult in a lot of cases to fund large infrastructure projects at airports. Capacity to borrow with adequate business case is essential to regional airports meeting growth demands, and with the commercialisation or setting up business units within airports, that allows those business models to be run. And the current governance model lacks depth and flexibility. It's more around the commercialisation. It's more around the ability to move quickly. And basically, this is the themes that are coming out of the aviation strategy. Within the aviation strategy, it's looked at two possible governance models that could be incorporated, the council-controlled organisations. That would require a change to the Local Governance Act to actually allow that implementation, but it would allow access to expert boards and professional directors. It would establish the airport as a clear business unit, containing all of its revenue streams within that business unit, providing it to allow it to have a clear commercial focus. In terms of its outcomes and where it might head in terms of its future growth and direction. It does involve, however, like all of these models, it does involve additional governance costs. Long-term private leasing, it was also identified. Once again, that provides the same access to professional boards and the like, and management teams, capacity to enter more flexibly into commercial agreements and the like, to move more, I guess, nimbly, you might say. Local government processes are necessary because of public money and public funding, and this can sometimes mean that the ability to move quickly on commercial projects and the like and opportunities is sometimes a bit constrained within the local government model. Downside to this is you do lose the day-to-day control. Having said that, though, however, you can always have clauses within long-term lease agreements that allow certain controls and certain step-in rights. So there are ways of mitigating those risks as well. State government also looked at the regional airport development funds and identified that there's a new focus for those funds. Those funds are now focused on infrastructure with clear community benefit and no capacity for alternate funding. So they're now looking at focusing the funding arrangements for smaller regional airports that, because of the passenger numbers and the like, don't have the capacity to fund their current infrastructure programs. So basically we're now talking at airports with less than 200,000 passengers as a potential focus in that area. It doesn't mean that our airport, for instance, doesn't have access to those funds. It just means it's a bit more difficult for us. And the other area was affordable air services. WA, it won't be anyone's surprise, is the highest interstate airfares in Australia. Queensland's about half that rate for interstate travel. And it's obviously driven by price-insensitive core business markets, the resource sector, the fly-in, fly-out market. And it also identified within the strategy that there is a surplus air freight capacity within the state. There's a clear opportunity to look at interstate and international freight within the state in itself. Okay. So, what were the key actions that came out of the strategy? To improve reliability and scope of aviation forecasting, clearly about what I said earlier about the under-forecasting of passenger numbers. The state itself wants to engage with BITRE, which is the Bureau of Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Economics, and Airports, and the consultancies that do the passenger forecasting, and wants to try and, I guess, make that whole process more robust, and they want to involve themselves in that process. They want to also improve state planning across the state, and what the focus is here is actually planning external to airports, so that airports are protected as essential pieces of infrastructure to the state, to allow that appropriate land development around airports is established, not inappropriate land development. They want to improve the long-term capacity of Perth, and they're now starting to think about a second airport, a la Sydney. It's quite an interesting finding that's come out of, or an interesting key action item that's come out of the strategy. But they want to now look at that there should be some early planning now done for a second airport, even though obviously Perth Airport is now talking about a new parallel runway, which will add 50% more capacity than they've currently got today. And they want to obviously assist Perth in the timely implementation of its infrastructure, which is around that runway piece as well. Perth spending another $850,000 on additional terminals within its current master plan as well, which are due to be opened in 2017-18. So Perth is investing substantial money in that area as well. Improve infrastructure planning and development at regional airports. They want to develop a master plan. They want to assist regional airports and engage as a state to develop a master plan template that reflects best practice in terms of aeronautic compliance and growth management and land use planning. And incidentally, that within the strategy, it says that it will be a key requirement that airports establish these master plans if they want access to RADS funding as well. So that was one of the key things that came out of that, out of the strategy. They want to establish a policy framework for master planning, which is all links to all of that, so they want clear policies and guidelines, a document that can be used by regional airports to undertake their master planning process. And they want to actively engage all stakeholders during the master planning process. They want to involve themselves in what they call the community consultative groups, be more involved as a state. Perth Airport has a community consultative group which looks at community concerns, community matters around airports, and they want to involve themselves in there and be an active participant of that. They want to engage with Perth Airport in coordinating aviation infrastructure across the state and seek to resolve land tenure issues that restrict development, inhibit commercial activity, which I alluded to earlier. Seek aviation security. This is an interesting one. They recognised that the requirements for aviation security has a large cost impost on regional airports, and I'll actually talk about that later in my presentation. Regional airports with lower passenger numbers still have to establish very similar levels of security, but with lower passenger bases. So that means disproportionately we would have to charge a higher per passenger charge to provide security. Currently that's managed by Qantas, but we are transiting from Qantas to being an airport authority, security authority in our own right. And the state has recognised that there should really be a network-based approach to this across the state or across the nation, so that effectively the larger capital city airports that require this increased security in and around the maximum takeoff weight of 20 tonnes or more for an aircraft, which requires that you have to have your full screening, your lags for international, that it's actually subsidised by the larger airports, which have much larger passenger numbers. It'd be no surprise to know that Sydney Airport's security costs around $2 a passenger. Alice Springs is around $25 a passenger. So those are the disparities that you get. And they want to foster tourism development across the state. They've recognised that with the resource sector and the fly-in, fly-out workforce, with the limited availability of rooms and the higher cost of rooms and the higher cost of airfares, that it's actually crowding out the tourism industry. And so that's going to be a key focus for them going forward, is to try and foster that tourism development and try to get that regenerated back into the state. And they want to encourage competition and to seek reduction in high cost airfares. What they want to do here is try to introduce a low cost carrier into the state. We don't have a low cost carrier currently doing interstate services, and they are looking at initiatives and ways that they can work with airports and with airlines to encourage someone like a Tiger Airways to start operating interstate. It's an interesting initiative. And they want to conduct a regulated review. This is there are not a lot of routes that are actually regulated where you can only have one RPT service, based on the fact that the state's policy is that for any population of, I think it's about 500 people, within 250 kilometres, there needs to be a regular public transport service, an RPT service. And to help foster and protect that, there are many airports that actually have regulation to only allow one RPT service provider to run that route. But they want to their policy is that over time they want that to move to competition, and so they want to review that whole regulatory requirement as well. And that's part of this conducting the tender for the Kimberley Air Services, and that's all about tendering for an air service provider to come into that region. Okay, so is there any questions on the aviation strategy? Well, that's a very quick snapshot. It's a 95-page document, and so that's just the highlights, if you like. It was only released late last week, so we will also be looking at that document in terms of what response we might make or comments we might make on that draft. So it's currently a draft document at the moment. Okay, the AAA conference. Good conference, very good conference. It was actually held over an entire week. Many members here went for various parts of that conference. It had a clear commercial focus. It talked about within the conference clear themes were the balance of aeronautical and non-aeronautical investment, and how do you get that balance right. A lot of airports talked about the need to actually establish good strong commercial streams, because that enabled them to then fund aeronautical infrastructure. And the theme was that if they didn't establish clear commercial arrangements which established good, strong commercial revenue streams, they would never have access to the funds required to actually develop their airports from an aeronautical perspective. And that was one of the clear themes that came out of the conference. And there was a whole piece on understanding your customers and their needs and wants, and that's all about stakeholder consultation. Airports exist for end users, and it was all talking about how do we engage with the customers, the key customers, airlines, passengers, airport users, transport operators, and the ground transport operators, and the like. There's a lot on designing terminals and car parks to maximise revenue outcomes, but not only to maximise revenue outcomes, but also to maximise passenger throughput, maximise stakeholder satisfaction. There was a couple of key projects that were a focus. To Perth Airport and its terminal expansion program was a focus, and also Canberra Airport with its new terminal expansion as well. And they were both very different projects, and they tackled the whole ground transport / passenger experience in a completely different way, but both achieving very good outcomes. Perth Airport, as I said, is spending over 850 million over the next few years to substantially upgrade its terminals. Canberra Airport spent something like $400 million. They're substantial sums of money. There was also a regional focus. There was a really good day devoted to regional airports and regional challenges. And I think everyone that went actually got quite a lot out of that. There was a good piece on governance, and I think there was about six different governance models that were talked about and how you could run an airport differently. Just the challenges that airports face regionally and how to cope with growth and generating sufficient returns to actually develop and build your airports. And there was a focus around replacing aging infrastructure. A lot of airports around the nation are all faced with the same thing. They're all being built around the same time. They're all approaching 50 plus years old. And it was a key focus on how do you upgrade that infrastructure going forward. Collaboration and design, linking with airline stakeholders, passengers, essential to redevelopment. And this is all about your stakeholder engagement. This is all about who are your end users and how do you engage with them. And lots of airports got up and spoke about their engagement programs. I'm trying to remember, was it Mount Newman? up to the airport now. You were there. Mount Barker, wasn't it? Mount Barker.
Mount Barker.
Yeah. They had an amazing engagement program, and it was really quite a good presentation. I was really, really impressed with the way that they approached their stakeholder engagement, their newsletters, and they even got to the point where they were actually consulting externally to external airports because they developed such a good program. It's quite impressive. And designed based on market needs, i.e. Perth T2 terminal. There was a session on creating regional terminals as opposed to international terminals, domestic terminals, and how that looks and how that operates and how they are fundamentally different operations. With your power in, push back, and your power in, power out type configurations that you would have. And there was the key thing that went through was the engagement at crucial stages and phases within the program, which it would be a focus for us as well going forward. Okay, the interim program. Secure air extinction. We've had some interesting developments as we've gone forward, some trials and tribulations. Change in scope. Our stakeholder engagement is continuing. Our cost estimates, we've had some costings obtained at the moment. It's north of 300,000. It's south of 500,000. At this stage, very high level. We had QS costings, which were 10 times that, which was quite impressive. Within that program and within what we're trying to do to increase that secure area, we've had some challenges going forward. But we had a very good meeting this morning with the border agencies, and we talked about functionally how they would work. And I think we've finally got there and come to a landing now on something that we can finally scope. So there's been about a 2-week slip in that program to date. Essentially, if I go to the plans, it's always easy to talk to a plan. Where is my... Oops. Sorry, guys. Going back. How do I go back on this? Just back to the first plan. Cheers. I'll use mine. It's easier.
That option one, but is it?
Yeah, well, this is just a bit of history, just to refresh everyone. So when we first looked at this, we looked at creating this space through here and realigning all of this, flipping this over, knocking out this area here to really increase this space so that we've basically got post-screening, we've got much bigger area domestically to work with, creating a security throughput here, which enabled, and I'll show that in the next slide, basically for the international operation, but included the outdoor area with a bit of clever screening around there. The whole idea was to improve airline on-time performance, get everyone through screening earlier, get them into the cafe, and more time in the cafe as well, which helps with funding this project as well. So this was, I guess, the grand plan, creating an extra airlock in here, creating some extra space in here for international, trying to give that international service some extra space as well. Come on. Yeah. Okay, so that was the domestic piece, and then the international piece was using operable walls to take the cafe out of the equation because we don't have any lag screening currently in here, so it's domestic screening only. So the idea behind this was to actually take this out and then you've got your upgraded screening coming through here into your international area, and then you're using almost this entire space through here as your international area. Really, really good plan. It involved moving toilets here. Fundamental change of the terminal made it much larger. Unfortunately, horribly expensive. So that caused us to revisit the plans and to review what we should and shouldn't be doing within this terminal to get it back within a budget, bearing in mind we're about to embark on a complete redevelopment of the terminal, which may include just expanding what we've existing got or may include a completely new terminal altogether. Depends what the outcomes of the next workshops are. We're actually going to be presenting those two options for everyone to consider going forward. And those plans are in their early stages and they'll be ready by the end of October for everyone to review. So this plan here, I guess, really nice to have, but given that we'll be opening a new terminal inside of 2 years, when I say new terminal, could be the existing terminal expanded, a lot of this space, a lot of that spend would be wasted, so it was just too expensive. And this was how the international area would operate as well, so that's just by shifting the toilets, creating this extra area in here, we had extra circulation around here, which removed the pinch point, we're able to bring everyone into the terminal in one hit because we had the processing over here, and we were then able to bring them in through, and this was sort of like a spotting point or marshalling point, and if anyone needed quarantine intervention, they could go in there, or they could have fast track straight out. So it was a good plan. Okay, so forgive my scrawl, but this is what we spoke to customs about today, and the plan going forward potentially. What we have done is we've left pretty much things where they are now, but we've still created this secure area, which makes this entire area more secure. Now, this is depicting the international operations through here. From talking to customs, they're more than happy, customs and quarantine, they're more than happy for us to go to one module and create that operation here. But rather than us bringing it through like this and bringing them back into this space here, the suggestion from them was they would be more than happy to process everyone back into this space through here. And with this increased area in here, we have the same space as we currently have in this area here. The idea being, if we go to this area through here, then we remove the need for all of these walls, basically, through here. So we can still have our screening, we can still have this larger area, and if we create a lag screening point through here, which came up today, I need to investigate that a bit further, but that still enables us to have our basic domestic screening. People can still use the cafe, it can still be post-screening, it means we don't have to build all these walls, and then there is a station here where you do your lag screening. So we need to investigate how that would work, but that was a suggestion actually by Steve. Thank you, Steve. So that was quite
good. That area is a lot smaller.
This area through here?
Yeah, it's a lot smaller than that area there.
It looks it, but the area and space through here is the same size of what we currently got, because currently we come across here. So when we're processing people through this area through here, and if I go back, if I can. Let me just go back. Just go back to the first one, I think. Okay, that's pretty much it. So currently we've got a wall that runs across here, and we've got this area in here, and we have this area here. And if you look at this area in here, with this extra area, we've actually got all of this area through here, even though there's a desk in here. So the actual area in here is ever so slightly bigger than what we've currently got today, what we currently use today. What it does allow us to do is, customs have said, look, if you want to use chairs that you can fold up and fold down, you can easily fit over 100 chairs in there, and you can sit people around these desks, which then can be used for processing for inwards, but they, you know, more than happy for them to use them domestically. It gives them access to all of these toilets in here as well. So from an international perspective, that works quite well. It means we can save a substantial amount of money in this project going forward. So I'll just go back to the school.
Yeah, you confused me there, because that area there, you reserved that back to domestic, and you said you're going to divert that into international. That's the domestic area.
Yeah, if we go back again, sorry.
Yes, it's
so we'll just go forward one.
That, yeah.
So bear in mind that's not there. I don't have a plan that shows the international operation in this set of slides. Bearing in mind that you've basically got an area that's about there,
yeah,
in there. And the area you've got in here, there's a desk there, but the area you've got in here is all of this area through here.
Yeah.
So, but there are desks and things in there. So as a trade-off, the space is about the same. Configurations is different, but the space is about the same. So from our conversations with the border agencies, they're more than comfortable to operate that way, and they recognise that we're building new stuff within our terminal or a new terminal, so they recognise that all of that's going to take place, and they're more than happy to operate it that way. We still need to talk to airlines about it and say this is how we're going to operate it, but they can see the clear benefits in taking one of the desks out, and they're more than happy for one of the desks to be taken out. So this exercise is about getting the costs down more than anything else. Okay, so toilets remain. So the toilets will now remain in place. Down to one desk, operates as a dual processing centre. Passback will be in the same position. Office and toilets and comms all remain in the same place in there. So costs will be up towards that $300,000 sort of mark, which will be much, much better. But next step for us now is to finish scoping. Now that we've come to a landing with with our initial conversation with the airlines, but more particularly with our border agency, and we've had an initial conversation with the Office of Transport and Security, hence this piece in here, which addresses their concern about having a fire exit opening directly to the outside world, and what does that mean for a security breach. So hence this airlock within here. So this now pretty much addresses what everyone, the inputs we've now got from everyone. And so this is now something that we'll move forward with. I'm going to meet with the architects again early next week and finalise that and finalise the costings on this as well. Okay. In terms of timelines, structural drawings are ongoing. We'll get them finished now. Stakeholder consultation is ongoing, and we'll finish in line with the structural drawings. We'll have one more round with everyone very quickly. And we're now looking at final approvals at this meeting, airport committee meeting in here in November, procurement and construction in this area, in here towards the end of the year. So it has slipped, but I think because of the ongoing consultation process and issues that we had to deal with, I think we've ended up with a better result in terms of where we have ended up. Okay, terminal amenity and verge improvements. As mentioned previously, the shelters, we end up needing to do a development application, and that's been a little bit held up internally within the council. And we now need to certify the structures as well, so we're going through that process. We need to get those shelters up before we can finalise the bin compound and the landscaping structures. But in terms of where we're sitting in that program, internal consultation's completed. We've developed the specs, and we're in this approvals process through here at the moment, trying to finalise that as quickly as possible. We'll be doing the works ourselves. Or finalising the procurement process there. Construction will be completed in November. Area opened up in November as well at this stage. Are there any questions on that program?
Yes. What type of shelters are you thinking of putting on the verge area?
These are existing shelters that have come, that have been sitting in a compound, and they're actually wing-shaped. They're almost similar
down to at the skate park, I think.
They're quite a bit bigger than we thought, and so when we got them out, we had to go through the extra approval process. But that's what we'll be putting up.
Okay.
So not expensive at all. Quite a cheap project. It's just about now getting the relevant.
And then they cover a wide area, wide enough for a number of people encounter the airport.
Yeah, well, there'll be two of them, so we'll actually have two areas that people can dwell in and take shelter under them.
Okay.
Okay, the bus holding area, obviously the ex-mobile site through here, we've had meetings with bus companies, looked at some line markings and how we would park the buses. They were very good. From those meetings there was a need to review the crossover points and a need to review the parking positions. Interestingly, buses can't reverse without spotters and all these sorts of things, so it was a good meeting, wasn't it, Anna? Mm-hmm. So that has caused a bit of a redesign. That's not holding up the procurement process. That is currently That is currently dovetailing off the back of getting the asphalt from the provider who is doing the apron extension. They're now not doing the asphalt until November, so the only reason that's extended is because that's when it's available. To go out and try to do it earlier out of another provider would have just cost extra money, and it just wasn't worth it for the 2 weeks that we're going to lose.
But that design's just a line marking.
It's just line marking.
It's not the car park's a car park. It's just the way the buses are.
It's just how they park, I should be clear on that. That's just lines on a road. It's not difficult at all. So we're now looking at, towards the end of November, having that bus parking area open and away. Okay, strategic reviews. If we cast our mind back, we procured the consultancy and we've done the desktop review. We've completed the first internal stakeholder workshops and we're now in this area here preparing updates and concepts. What we're doing with the car park is looking at an expanded car park area, which is predicated on the relocation of the logistics zone to get the rental cars out of that area there, and looking at the mix of long-term and short-term, how the front of road will work. Also, we're looking at two options for the terminal, as I mentioned earlier. So we're looking at the keep everything basically where it is, but improve the functionality and increase the space. Where that would take us from 3,000 square metres to around 7,000 square metres. And would it works. There are some limitations, and I guess we'll discuss that later in the month when we've got plans to talk to and look at. It doesn't fix the check-in counter area, and we've heard the problems you can have with check-in counters, and so there's some issues with that, but it does work. It does work, and it is an option, and we'll have that costed at a quite a high level, but we'll have it costed so we get an idea of what that is. The other option we'll be looking at is let's just do best practice, build the best practice terminal we can. What does that look like? And that's looking like about 10,000 square metres. It does include a standalone area for international. We can currently do swing gate facilities. They always come with compromises. They work, but there are compromises to it. And so this additional 3,000 square metres, if you like, not quite 3,000, but close to that, is where the international piece would be. But what we could do is build the bigger terminal with the swing gate facilities and use that area as a management area for a short term until we're ready to expand into that area. So rather than build what we would call phase one, stage one, and then phase one, stage two, we'd do all of phase one, but we would just use some of that area for operational purposes in the short term. Save us some money, spend a little bit more up front, but we'll cost that as well. So they're the two options that we'll be bringing back to the committee to review and consider, and we'll be doing some stakeholder consultation, external stakeholder consultation on that as well.
In your analysis there, but I can't see anywhere at all that there's any input or availability for the community to have a look at.
We'll get to that. it is high level. This is high level, but you're spot on, and there's some slides on that as well. All right. Come on. Thank you. Must be the way I'm pushing this button. Okay, so the freight logistics zone, we've brought that forward now based on feedback we got from the last workshop and based on the business opportunity that we see there. So we're now in the process of just getting a quote from Raybine to do that additional work and then see if that fits within our procurement policies. And then later in October they'll do the complete desktop review on that. We'll bring that back within all of the stakeholder consultation frameworks we'll be looking at. There'll be a bit of options analysis and what's going to work best in terms of revenue streams. So what we're looking at with the freight piece is the airport will build essentially the freight apron, the ground transport arrangements, create the block, but we'll be going out looking for a third-party provider to actually do common user freight terminal. And there is a range of models that we can use as a commercial opportunity. It could be a flat rent. It could be a flat rent plus turnover on freight, so we could charge for freight tonnage going through. Or it could be a lower flat rent plus payback, which means we end up owning the facilities at the end of a period. So there's a number of options, and what we're going to do is go out with a request for proposal. We'll do the high-level design enough so that we can go out with a request for proposal, and we'll test the market with a view to seeking proposals in this period through here, early part of the year, and hopefully, well, definitely, get someone on board, get a contract, a commercial arrangement in place, and get the thing built, basically, by end 2014, potentially. Okay. Thank you. Okay, a car park, basically, it's nearly a mirror of the terminal work. So here we are with the design and costing, a tender and award contract in this at mid-2014 with construction of both terminal and car park construction, this area here. This series of work will depend on the freight logistics zone when we get that built and how quickly we can get car rental companies moved. So that may move around a little bit, but the intention is to have that completed by around the mid-2015, terminal finishing at the end of 2015.
Car rentals under 7.4, are they? Car rentals
under 7.4? Yeah, well, within that program, car rentals would need to be included within our program to establish their relocation. Yeah. So it's a bit of a jigsaw puzzle, and we just need to get that right. In terms of the freight, obviously the design and costing is in this mid part, hopefully design, costing, tender award, contract award. We've actually got it going into the second quarter of 2015. As I said, we could potentially bring that forward. But that's currently how it is here. We've still got construction third quarter 2015, so I think this slide needs a bit of updating because I think we're pretty certain we've pulled that forward.
But, I think the previous slide brought the that one up a bit.
I think this slide's a little bit inaccurate. Apologies for that. Okay, the operational update. We've established ourselves a PAG, a Pilbara Airports Group. I don't know if people know, but there's a privatised airport group, there's a public affairs airports group, and there's now a Pilbara Airports Group. Now, the Pilbara Airports Group, what we've done is, as part of transitioning from from Qantas screening to airport screening, we've partnered with Newman and with Karratha Airports to tender and acquire the necessary services and to work out the transition approach to becoming a screening authority in our own right. When we were doing that, it also occurred to us as a group that there were a lot of things that we could work on together that we weren't competing on, that we could jointly benefit from. Joint tenders for food and beverage, joint tenders for compliance work, engineering works, line marking and the like. But to keep it at arm's length and to make sure it was run appropriately, we approached the Australian Airports Association and we asked them to chair and facilitate that group. So we now have the Australian Airports Association, Scott Scanlon, I think it is. Can't remember now. But Scott is he's the regional manager for regional airports across Australia. So he will now chair that group and going forward. And we're starting to develop a bit of an agenda where we talk about the various things. Key at the moment is the transition from Qantas to us becoming the airport screening authority. So that's the key piece of work we're currently doing at the moment. We had our first meeting as a group this week. That went pretty well. And where we're at with say screening and the like is that we've approached Qantas to enable us to complete our TSP, our Terminal Security Plan or program, and to complete our application to OTS, we need to advise OTS of what equipment we are going to use as a screening authority. It's a bit of a chicken and egg thing. We haven't gone out to tender, we haven't selected equipment yet. So we've talked to Qantas about leasing in the short term, 3 months to 6 months, the existing equipment as it currently stands, so we can complete our applications and become the screening authority. Once we've done that, we can tender, and then it's just a simple change to our TSP. We don't have to... The application's the application. Once it's done, it's done. So we can then just change our TSP when we get new equipment, when we've tendered it. At this stage, having a look at it, we've spoken to IIS and MSS about providing these services. We're going to approach MSS about giving us a high-level quote on what it would cost to run the staff and that, like, to be the screening service provider. Those numbers and with Qantas' numbers, we can start to fill out the figures. But at this stage, we've done some modelling on what the costs would be, and we're looking around the $2.5 million a year to run screening and be the screening authority here. That equates to just under $10 a passenger.
What's our present Qantas?
Qantas won't tell us what it costs. Qantas probably have a network advantage too across everywhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
So our intention as a group is potentially to award a contract to one provider across the Pilbara airports to generate savings through that approach. Yeah. That also helps with staffing and the like.
Are you looking at purchasing or leasing the new equipment?
We haven't come to a landing on that, but we're looking at both options at this stage. So we may just lease the equipment because, once again, we can pass that charge through to airlines, but being mindful that everything costs money and ultimately the passenger pays a security charge as part of their ticket. So we want to try and keep it as cheap as possible. But given that Alice Springs Airport's at $25, just under $10, and I'm loathe to quote the figure because it's very high level and the costings aren't finalised, doesn't look bad. It looks pretty competitive. But as I said before, with Sydney at $2, you can see as a regional airport, because of the smaller numbers, how it gets a bit uncompetitive. But that's where we're currently sitting with that. The transition is meant to take place in March, April 2014. We are being held up by OTS, the Office of Transport and Security. They haven't given us permission to lease the Qantas equipment yet. They're changing they're implementing new security protocols, and we're still waiting on them. So what we're doing is we're chasing them through the AAA to try and get a response out of them as soon as possible. That's just one of those things we have to deal with, basically.
In the interim period, they're going to delay, you're going to then lease the equipment from Qantas during that period of time that you have in negotiations of purchasing your new equipment?
We're also negotiating with Qantas to extend if we have to, if we can't get OTS approval. But, yeah, if we get OTS approval, we'll lease the Qantas equipment in the interim period.
Yeah, new stuff comes in.
Yeah, so that we can then jump on and be the screening authority straight away. Yeah. That's the plan.
Because this stuff would be obsolete by now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, we don't want to lease it too long. It's 9 years old. It's past its use-by date.
Really?
Yeah. So we'll be looking at new equipment, state-of-the-art equipment and the like. Apronworks, we've already spoken about that, but basically asphalting will take place in November. Actually, the apronworks are looking pretty good out there. Most of the base course is down. So they're barreling along quite well, aren't they, Russell?
Yeah.
They're pretty close to program, I'd say. And as I said, with the bus parking, we'll dovetail straight off that when it's done. Whoops. Okay, so stakeholder engagement program, which you asked about, Arnold. Yeah. So what we've done is we've come up with a table to look at the key stakeholders and the key information that we need to impart based on what that stakeholder is. So we've come up with a table that looks at those. And so we've got stakeholders like inform is the general public, and what are the general public, what are their interests? They want new facilities, they want to be kept informed, and seek support. So the objective is to keep informed and seek support. The methods through website, media, fact sheets, and the like. We'll actually engage them in what we're calling placemaking, which Gordon will speak to in a sec, which is at the end of this presentation. Just to let you know what that is and why we're doing it, and we're actually dovetailing off that because the airport is airport, and Steve mentioned about a sense of place and a lot greater sense of place. So there is a placemaking exercise being done by council, where we want to dovetail into that to make sure that we benefit from it. And the airport is a key piece in that. And so those that we consult with, obviously passengers, airport users, government agencies, and the like. And you can see the milestone. I won't read out everything there, but you can see how we've developed up, how we need to communicate with them and what we need to communicate and you know, what are the milestone dates and at what times they need to be communicated with. And obviously those are the user groups that we need to involve as well. So based on that, the engagement schedule is looking like this. So there will be a placemaking community workshop on the 28th of October in Port Hedland, and a stakeholder workshop on placemaking as well, which will be internal and be in the offices here on the Tuesday. Dovetailing into that will be the concept designs that we will be bringing to stakeholders and to everyone here, which will be on Tuesday as well. So we're doing a workshop around that, the various things I've mentioned earlier. There's the airport committee workshop and committee meeting on the 30th of October. And then we go into industry workshops, which will be with the border agencies, government agencies, CASA, Air Services Australia and the like. They will be in Perth, and we're actually, Air Services Australia has agreed to let us use their conference facilities to undertake those workshops, which is really great. Then we'll be taking out the airlines. The airlines have indicated they don't want to be part of the bigger group, they want to meet with us individually and talk through their own, but very precious about their IP and stuff like that. So we can't meet Virgin and Qantas together, and they don't want to talk to government agencies while we're in the same room, so it's all quite interesting. So we will do them separately, basically, is what I'm saying. And then there's the airside operations and the industry workshop around that. So this is the movement now going from power in, power out to power in, push back. Just keeping them informed. We're obviously going to do it, but we just need to make sure that we take on board feedback and the like, because with power and pushback, whilst it'll save us substantial sums of money on creating extra apron plate space, there will be increased operations, there'll be tugs, tow bars, and extra staff. So those sorts of things need to be talked through as we go forward. So that's the program, and I will hand over to Gordon to talk about placemaking.
So I've only got four slides because I know we're well over. So as Brett said, we've made the decision to add to the front of the next phase of engagement the placemaking process. Now some people might roll their eyes at placemaking. If you do, it probably means you've had a bad experience in the past where a lot of people sat around looking at the navel, maybe howling at the moon, but didn't actually import any value to the process. we're going to make sure that this experience is a bit different than that. So I'm not going to read it through, but I guess a couple of things to remember is for a lot of people, the airport is going to be the first thing that they see and the last thing that they see when they leave Port Hedland. For some people, it may be coming in a high visit. It might be the only part of Port Hedland, apart from the camp and where they work, that they actually see. So as part of this new redevelopment process, we can go to a lot of trouble to come up with a very functional building that has no character. It says nothing about the Pilbara and says nothing about Port Hedland. Or, through a placemaking process, we can potentially do all of those things, that it has a look and it has a feel and it actually says something about Port Hedland as well as being a functional airport and a functional terminal. So, you've probably... Can you just click to the next slide, please, Grace? Well, they haven't come out very clear, but it's a range of different things. You've probably noticed it when you've seen it done well. You probably haven't noticed it when you haven't seen it done at all. And I guess the Perth Airport's an unfortunate example where it might function well as an airport, but it really doesn't say anything about Perth. It doesn't say anything about WA. It doesn't really say anything apart from maybe representative of a doctor's surgery in Sydney.
You shot a black swan years ago.
Yeah. Oh, that's Perth. But here's some examples of, and I think the bottom two examples might be Darwin. Darwin Airport. Top left example, I think, is Alice Springs, by memory, and they are just simple things that are captured from, particularly from the community, but also from your stakeholders, at the beginning of your design process that says something about the place. It gives it a sense of place, and we want, at the end of the day, this to represent Port Hedland. So it gives it some... So we can work hard and get the functionality. This also has the opportunity to give some character. Thanks, Chris.
Now that would be an important procedure to take place before the architecturals.
The last slide shows you how it all comes together. So top right is Rome. It says everything about Italy and Rome. It's quite obviously a bit grander than we might end up with, but you get the point. The two left examples, that's actually just a simple airport somewhere in Thailand, a regional airport in Thailand. It's very basic, but it says something about the place. It's actually the airport at Koh Samui. Costs nothing, but it actually says you're somewhere in tropical sort of Thailand. And I think the bottom right is, I think, some concepts around a future redevelopment of Adelaide Airport where...
It's been done now.
It's been done now?
Yeah.
Hold a photo. it's just as simple as being textures in paving and things like that. Thanks, Grace. So this is kind of where we're trying to bring it all together. So the placemaking workshops, as Brett said, will take place at the beginning. It'll involve community and also the stakeholders. And what I'll do is I'll pass around these now, if you can have a look, but I don't need them back, because it's actually a work that's been done for another company, so it's a bit commercial in confidence. But the company has, Village Well are doing the placemaking for us. They have allowed us to have a look at it to see the type of work. So what you'll see as you look through that is there's some overlays, some comments made and annotations on plans that then link by keys to themes and key areas within in this case will be the airport, and how to bring in that sense of place, themes, colours, ideas around Port Hedland into the airport redevelopment. So the output from the placemaking will be, we'll get a place framework, which will be some of the information that you can see contained in this document. I'll pass it around as well. And that basically will get sort of, and that'll carry through not only into the final detailed design and the finishes of the airport redevelopment of the terminal, but also in terms of how the terminal operates. On top of that, through this process, we'll also be able to talk to people about what they want from a functional point of view around the airport, and that gets fed into the plans that you can see with the notes on them around how to improve the functionality of the plans that'll come through the design workshop, ultimately get factored into the review which we're undertaking around the master plan, then the more detailed designs and scheduled finishes around the redevelopment of the terminal. So that's the outputs that we're looking to get from the placemaking process. They'll happen at the beginning of this next phase of the design process, but they'll not only feed through that design process, but they'll also pick up and drop into the end part, which is what it'll look like when it's all finished.
where you could be, you've got your designated workshops. Where do you propose to run them, Gordon?
So they're, if we, they're basically the workshops at the end of October that Brett's talking about.
Yeah.
So we'll have placemaking workshops immediately going straight into the design workshops at the end of October.
So you've got two, if my memory serves me correctly, you've got two workshops. You've got one in Perth on the 31st and one here on the 30th. That's right.
We've got 3 days here.
Yeah.
So there'll be a series of workshops. There'll be these workshops. There'll be airport workshops in those 3 days. And then we've got the stakeholders, the user groups, if you like, in the second half of the week down in Perth.
And where do we involve the workshops for the architectural design? Where do we involve them? Because this is very important that they be involved in this.
Yeah, well, this what will happen is we'll end up with a document which will detail the placemaking requirements and scope and the like, which will then be the document that helps inform the architects on what they need to do and incorporate. Yeah.
Okay. Very important.
Mm-hmm. And so with the placemaking company too, one of their key consultants has an urban design and architectural background and makes no bones about the fact that they're, part of their job is to challenge the architects and challenge the designers about the functionality of the building. They don't make any apologies for that.
No, they should.
The architects should challenge them, basically.
Absolutely. and that's part of the creative process.
Okay.
So is there any questions about that? I'm happy if you keep these for to the rest of the meeting, but I did make promises that there would be no takeaways in relation to this one.
Okay. Now, Brett, did you complete your presentation, is it?
Yes, it does. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much indeed. Okay, move on to under pressure this morning. Project up to date, 10.1. Project up to date, you have all got a copy of them there. Now, I think this is one that was requested by Councillor Jacobs, I think. Any comments on the up-to-date program?
No, but just through the chair, if I may, with Bob Cousins, our manager, is he unable to be here today?
Yes, we asked the question in the first place. Yes, okay. He was ill. He was unavailable.
Okay, thank you.
I've got comments on the works program, Campbell Works program, and commercial projects. I think you're pretty well up to date now. Qantas leases, how are they going? The end of October, are they just about finished to go, Sarah? Anna.
Yeah, so through the chair, they're still with Qantas. They have quite an extensive internal review process. But we do have confirmation that the self-check-in kiosks will be installed within a month.
We've also got in there, and their lease is in October, the lease executed for the Pilbara Cargo Terminal. That'll have to be extended a bit, won't it?
So the advice we have from Pilbara Cargo Terminal is those documents are coming back to us for execution.
This month?
Yep, this month. And in terms of operation, that's still with customs for their approval. It's a lengthy customs approval process for that operation.
Thank you. Any other comments from the program? Okay, moving on. If somebody would like to move that they'd be adopted,
some of the
councillors on back. Wally, all those in favour? Motion carried. Thank you. Right, we move on to. Car parking. I think at this stage I'd like to ask somebody to move that we suspend standing orders for 10.2 for further discussion.
So moved.
Second, Councillor Dillon. All those in favour?
Gary. Okay, it's open for discussion. So move we resume standing orders. I move councillors on back against Mount Gilliam. Resume standing orders. Resume standing orders. And the following resolution, and then a resolution is submitted for consideration as on the board. Can I have a mover for that motion?
So moved.
Move councillors on back. Seconded. Chris Wally. All those in favour? Motion carried. Thank you, councillors. I think that clarified that and answered the question we got from public notices still, I think. Yeah. Oh, yes. Item 11, we've got late items as permitted by... Right, we do have a late item for that. Is the amendment to the next meeting of the airport committee. We'll be now on the 31st of October. The reason being is that this committee will cease to exist as from the election, and they will have to elect new committees, and they will also may have new criteria for the committee. We don't know. And then also we will have to then advertise for the community members also. Well, we can't do that within a week or two, so we put that back to the 31st of October.
Through the chair, those advertisements then will go out after that 31st of October meeting, or during that meeting?
By rights, Councillor Dillingham, it should go out once council have adopted the procedure of having an airport committee and also the content of the same. That's the way it should be done.
Thank you.
You have to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to note that the ordinary council meeting is held on the 23rd of October, therefore at that meeting it will need to be established for the next one.
Correct. And also the audit finance committee.
Same sort of finance. They'll both be discussed.
So all those committees are going to be established at that meeting.
Then the criteria which they want to be located at. Motions which have been previously given, nothing. We have no confidential items. We have any leave of absence. No leave of absence. Before I close the meeting, I just like to remind people of one of our very big, strong committee members who's been with us for quite some time now is going departing the town at Port Hedland, and he's taken up residence in a little township called, I think, Margaret River, I think. And I refer to Chris Wally. Chris has been a good contributor to us that piece of time, and also another little aspect of it is his birthday today as well.
So,
Chris, I'd like you to accept
of your effort and appreciation of the airport committee. And
thank you,
put on your wardrobe down after you've painted the bedroom.
Thank you very much.
Thank
very
you.
Good of you.
Thank
I
you
appreciate
much.
It. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd just like to say thank you to everybody. I'm very sad to be leaving. But I've decided I've made the right decision to leave town. I think this is the best time for me to leave. It's a paradox that I'm leaving. I've been here 28 years in Port Hedland, and it's a paradox for me that I'm leaving town at the time when I'm most involved in the town board any time ever. But that's the way these things seem to work out. But in any event, I'd like to say that I've been very honoured to be on this committee, and I've learned a great deal. And I am still, even though I am leaving town, I'll always be interested in the Port Hedland, particularly in the Port Hedland airport upgrade. I'd like to think maybe if it is possible, if I could be, let's say, updated every month about what is happening with the airport committee in terms of subject matter and that situation.
Well, if you leave out for the address, Chris, I'm sure we can make arrangements for the minutes to be circulated to you.
Yeah, thank you all very much.
Thanks, Chris.
Well, having said that, and there's no other further business, so I'd just like to thank everybody for their effort and the airport committee, the ones who are the present ones. And let's hope they all will come back again, a new version and a bit of promotion for the airport committee, because there's no doubt about it, it's the future of Port Hedland, just as much as iron ore is. Good luck, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, staff.
There's some fruit and brownies in the fridge. Birthday brownies.
It's operation. Yeah, he's got to come back to work. He's not allowed to walk around.
He's not allowed to walk.
Till when?
Till Friday.
Till Friday. He's not allowed to walk.
So he won't be at work all week.
Yeah.
And not allowed to drive because they did the veins.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, so he's just stuck at home. He's emailing, but he can't walk.
Hey, one, I was going to mention in your presentation, but one of the biggest assets I received out of that trip away was that they made that presentation, I think, from Exmouth about the importance of the operations manager position. I think you come in a little bit late.